Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello, welcome in. It's a Tuesday edition of the Hoosier Report, and glad to have you with us today. As always, another day as we continue on toward the month of March. The countdown is on. Some big moments ahead in basketball, not just with Indiana, but in our area as well. We look forward to talking about this stuff each and every day. Lots of great guests scheduled to join us each and every day. We've got a pretty good regular lineup, including Greg Doyle and Mike Pegram today. I'll tell you more about today's show here in just a moment, but we always work in some additional guests from time to time. I think we have a great lineup of both regulars and others that join us from time to time. Plenty to get to, lots to think about, not a lot of games to think about from an Indiana perspective, which is different from the last few weeks. It's really seemed like, especially that when I was sick, seemed like there was a game every other day for Indiana, and unfortunately I was unable to get in here and talk a lot about it with you. But now some time to get ready, which I like. I think a break is needed, whether Indiana was red hot right now or whether Indiana's trying to figure some things out as they are. I think a break heading into this weekend in Purdue is probably a good thing. We got to remember this is something, and I think the DJ Carton situation at Ohio State, given that Indiana played there on Saturday and given that his announcement, his tweet, his mom had an announcement or a little tweet as well. His coaches had some things to say about it. So did Archie Miller after the game. But I think his announcement or his reminder last week that these kids are college students. These kids like DJ Carton, sometimes have struggles, obviously, with basketball and away from basketball. And sometime in DJ Carton's case, you know, it gets to the point where he's got a little issue and he needs some time to figure that out. And so, again, I think a light break for this team is, and for any college basketball team at this point of the season, is probably a good thing. So Indiana off, but guess what? Bracketology rolls along this time of year. That's kind of the big deal each and every week. A lot of these forecasters will be updating their brackets, their picks for the NCAA tournament. A couple new ones came out yesterday. We'll talk about Joe Lunardi, who's like the king of it. He's been doing it forever and forever, it seems. One of the first or the first out with ESPN doing bracketology. In fact, they coined that phrase, bracketology. He had an update out yesterday. I think it's his second or third update so far. And then Andy Bottoms, who is a guy that we've had on this show that does bracketology and does a really good job. He's got an Indiana connection as well. He's part of the Assembly Call group, and he's been on this program to talk about IU and bracketology and other subjects over the years. He had his latest edition of the bracket come out through games played last night, February 3rd, so updated through Monday night's college basketball action. And I am pleased to report that both Andy and Joe Lunardi have Indiana in their field for the NCAA tournament this year. I don't have Joe Lunardi's predictions in front of me. I do have Andy Bottoms, and he has Indiana going to Omaha as a 9 seed, taking on Wichita State, an 8 seed if you're interested. So, again, a lot of times these are a lot closer, a lot better predictions than what you might think, but these are all moving parts and moving pieces because they're going to use, obviously, data and proven things with where the schedules and the records and the conference wins and losses are at this point of the year. A lot can change between now and that final projection that a lot of these guys will make just days before the committee actually releases their bracket at the conclusion of conference tournaments. But Indiana's there, at least right now. They're going to have to win some games. They can't keep losing games and stay in these projections, let alone stay in the one that means everything when it comes out later in March. But Indiana in the cut, making the cut, you could say, at this juncture with some big, big moments ahead. And you look to Purdue and you look at their season and their record. They've had some great wins. The Virginia, of course, has really not materialized into a win that you thought it might on their resume as a non-conference win, but they just manhandled Virginia at home. That was a good win regardless, even though Virginia's got plenty of struggles. And then, of course, Michigan State, they beat the crap out of them at home as well, and, you know, that looked pretty good. But overall, things don't look so good for the Boilermakers, but kind of a scary thing, even at Assembly Hall on Saturday, knowing that this is a team that was able to handle Michigan State. I mean, handle them. Indiana was able to beat them, but, I mean, absolutely handle them. So this is a game Indiana has to win. I won't call it a must-win game. I think we get too caught up on saying that. You could make a reason to make every game a must-win game. I do think, as I've said, that we'll get later to this month. We'll get into the final week of conference play, the final handful of games, stretch of conference games in the Big Ten. I do think then you could say there will be, for some teams, maybe Indiana, some must-win back-against-the-wall type games that'll be there. But this is an important one to get. It would sure help things because, A, it's at home, and, B, it's Purdue, a team that has had its struggles as well and is not anywhere close right now to being projected as an NCAA tournament team. One other final note as we open the show. That Florida State game, and I don't even know, I didn't finish watching the game last night. They played North Carolina. It was in the first half when I saw the score. But that Florida State win for Indiana, I don't know that we knew it at the time. I think it was a good win. I think everybody was very pleased with the team and how they played and thought this is a great win, but I'm not sure anyone could have projected at that time how good of a resume win that would be for Indiana. I think they're in, you know, the top 10, top 8, top 7, something like that right now of the AP poll. They obviously having a tremendous year, and that's a win that when Indiana gets in a little nip and tuck situation, that's one of those on the resume that you're awful glad to have, no question about that. Let's take a look at the show lineup today. It's presented by Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, we have our Zaxby's headlines for this Tuesday, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. We're going to go through the headlines very quickly today. Later in the program, Greg Doyle of the Indianapolis Star joins me. Didn't get caught up with Greg last week. I was out sick, and so we've got lots to talk about. IU basketball, Victor Oladipo back with the Pacers. Also, Greg has some thoughts on Kobe Bryant as well, and we'll talk about all that coming up here in just a bit. Then later in the program, Mike Pegram of Pegs.com, he's with us. We're going to go ahead and take a look at an early look at the IU-Purdue game today and what this game means for Indiana and kind of where the conference and the standings are at with Mike a little bit later in the program today. Visit your local Honey Baked Ham store in New Albany and receive $15 off any bone-in ham. Also, buy one, get one free ham bones for a limited of time at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's jump to our Zaxby's headlines quickly. A couple things to get to. Kyle Nedenrip of the Indianapolis Star, who joins us Fridays, had a terrific story. You can read it on the Indy Star website or the Courier Journal website about Trey Kaufman. The headline, coveted four-star basketball recruit Trey Kaufman is a total package with elite offers. And obviously there have been all sorts of profiles and stories on Trey. There will be lots more over the next year and a half or so, you can bet that, as he and Silver Creek are set for some really good days in basketball ahead. But this is and Trey's joined this program. He's been on our high school stuff. He's been on this show before. You know, it's not like he's a stranger to any of us. But this piece by Kyle, who is a tremendous writer in himself, is a great, great profile of Trey Kaufman. And if you know him, even if you're in Sellersburg and you've seen him play and you've met him, it's just a great profile. It tells you a lot more about his interest and how he is and how humble he is, what's important and what's really not important to him. Has some quotes from Brandon Hoffman, of course, his basketball coach at Silver Creek. Has some quotes from Joe Decker, quotes from Joe Decker, the Silver Creek baseball coach as well, who Trey played for in a lot of the feeder system stuff at Silver Creek growing up, but it gives a lot of insight on who he is, and he even calls himself a little bit of a nerve. I think he's a little bit of an outsider maybe in some ways, which is pretty cool. But a good kid and a great player, we all know that. And I think Trey, as Chad Gilbert mentioned yesterday, maybe approaching the Romeo waters as far as what his high school career could look like when it's all said and done, and the interest in him and the crowds at some of the games. I think it's going to do nothing but grow, especially as local schools, Indiana, Louisville, and others, continue to recruit him and stay in the mix very heavily with Trey Kaufman. But make sure you read Kyle Nedenriff's story. I'll retweet it if you can't get to it. It's just a tremendous story on Trey. I thought it was definitely worth a mention. Also, Justin Smith of IU named the January Indiana Male Scholar Athlete of the Month. He is excelling, continuing to excel in the classroom. He is studying entrepreneurship and corporate innovation, is Justin Smith. And so it's neat to see him, as he's had some pretty good games, some decent games at times. He's been maybe a little more consistent than what he was last year, but great to know that he also is continuing to do good stuff off the court as well in the classroom also. And one final thing, this is just a quick little note. I don't have any confirmation on this. I don't know what this looks like, what it will look like, but and I've had lots of questions about it. The NBA trade deadline is coming up on February 6th. I don't know if it's midnight or noon. I don't know what the time is. And Romeo Langford's name has been mentioned. Now, the people that have sent me the stories, these aren't, you know, ESPN stories, or this isn't our guy Tom from Westerholm from up in Mass that's been coming on the program occasionally for Romeo updates. But there are thoughts out there on some of these NBA trade rumor sites that Romeo Langford could be trade bait for Boston, for that Boston Celtics team. So something to keep an eye on. I don't know if it's legit. Don't know that it'll happen. I seem to think, or tend to think, that Boston is still very intrigued with Romeo based on some things and how they've handled him and some inside things I hear. But it's going to be interesting to see. And Brian Sullivan tells me he thinks the deadline is 3 o'clock on Thursday. So maybe between now and Thursday afternoon, we'll all kind of stay closer to NBA trade rumors and websites than what we normally do. But it'll be interesting to see if Romeo Langford stays at Boston or if he is traded. Going to be interesting to see if he is moved here in the next couple days and how that could affect him. That's a look at our Zaxby's headlines for this Tuesday edition of the program. Zaxby's, with locations in Jeffersonville and New Albany. We'll head to a commercial break. When we come back, Greg Doyle of the Indianapolis Star, presented by Coffee Crossing. We'll talk a lot of stuff with Greg. Indiana basketball, IU Purdue. We're going to talk Kobe Bryant. We're going to talk Victor Oladipo. A lot of stuff coming your way, all made possible by Coffee Crossing with their newest location in downtown New Albany, coming your way next on a Tuesday edition of the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
Welcome back, and on Tuesdays, Greg Doyle of the Indianapolis Star with us, presented by Coffee Crossing. Coffee Crossing would like to invite everyone to their newest location. It's in downtown New Albany. They have turned their own bakery at 140 East Main Street into the fifth Coffee Crossing location for you to enjoy. Greg Doyle, I did not get to catch up with you last week, was out sick, so we've got plenty to talk about today. And, of course, IU basketball dominates a lot of our discussion on this program. And, Greg, this team has been up. They've been down. Now they've lost three games in a row, but still have, I think, some hope, the fan base does, that this team can find a way somehow to slide into the NCAA tournament with just about a month, maybe just a shade more, a few days more than a month of regular season calendar dates left here in the Big Ten. It's a very interesting, a very frustrating Indiana team at times, and one that it feels like might come down to the final hours once again to determine if this team has a chance to dance or not.
Yeah, and you said, does this team have hope? And and it does, and the hope is called Assembly Hall, and that's just, I feel like this is the way it's been since I got here, and I've been here in 2014, that IU, you know, even more than what you would expect. I mean, obviously teams are better at home. We all get that. But it seems like IU just careens wildly into, they play one way at home and one way on the road. It doesn't matter if Archie Miller is the coach or Tom Crean. That's just how it has been. And that's how it's been this year. And no, they didn't win their last game, but they could have and should have. And it was against Michigan State, I think it was. So anyway, they've got enough home games. And that, I tell you what, that Florida State win, the best thing IU has going for right now is that Florida State can't lose. And that win just is going to look better and better and better as the season goes on in their resume.
Yeah, I just mentioned that. I had said that last night. I was flipping around. I had a couple minutes, saw that North Carolina, Florida State very early were playing a close game, and I did not know who won. I did not look at scores or ever make it back to that game. But talking about bracketology and some predictions that came out yesterday and this morning, I said one thing that Florida State game has, and it looks like will continue to really help Indiana. So it sounds like they were able to go on and win last night, and boy, they are playing good and highly ranked.
They did win last night. They beat, of course, North Carolina's not very good, which is kind of weird, but that's the way it goes. But yeah, on the other hand, another win they had that at the moment seemed great. Now they're not getting helped by Ohio State anymore. You know, that's too bad, because that's schedules is you play who's on your schedule, you beat them when you beat them, and you kind of hope that once you're done beating them, they then have a great season. So it lifts you up, and Ohio State is dragging them down right now a little bit.
Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star, presented by Coffee Crossing. I didn't have this in my notes, but I'm going to ask it because you mentioned it. You know, home game's important. This Indiana-Purdue game, so important for multiple reasons in the path to the NCAA tournament, I feel, for this Indiana team. You mentioned you've been here since 2014 now, that Indiana's basically been in a similar position now each of those years when it comes to postseason basketball. You've covered games everywhere, North Carolina, Duke, across the country, Final Fours, you know, regular season games, et cetera. And we've talked a little bit about this, but it seems like a lot of times nowadays when Assembly Hall is a discussion point or someone writes a story about it, obviously, it's historic, and it's neat, and it's special, and it's got a great feel to it. And you often hear other opposing coaches that play there compliment the fan base and so forth. But as far as Indiana people go, whether it's other fans or others that speak up, you know, at times people are a little disappointed with the student section if it's not some roaring game where it's just absolutely madness in there, that students maybe don't turn out, or maybe there were more open seats generally upstairs than what you'd like to see at a place where basketball seems to still matter so much. With all the opportunities you've had across the country to see the big rivalries and some of the neat and unique environments in college basketball, the trips you make to Indiana, whether it's one of those huge rivalry, important nighttime games that's packed, or whether it's maybe an early season game where the crowd leaves a little to be desired and you're there for an early look at the Hoosiers, how do you rate Assembly Hall against the Rupps and the Dukes and the North Carolinas and the other great venues in college basketball?
Well, shoot, you're asking me a hard question, and it's not hard. The answer is easy. The problem is I know what the audience is, and I know what they want to hear, but I also know I've been doing this for 30 years, and Assembly Hall is a major disappointment, and has been for me since I got here. And when I say those words, I want to say this. That's not my fault. Assembly Hall is never full. It's close, but it's never full. And by never full, I don't mean I can count four seats. No, I mean there are entire rows up high and sometimes entire sections. It's the worst sections, but still they're empty. They're empty for the Michigan State game. You know, you're playing number five or whatever Michigan State is, and – I tried to count the empty seats, and I tried to count them by, you know, going row by row. Like if there's 20 seats in that row, and I see 12 rows in a row are empty, that's 240. And I just roughly in my head, I remember counting about 1,000 empty seats, like in bulk. I mean, I didn't like go one at a time. There's also one single one there. No, just looking at rows and massive empty spots, at least 1,000. And it's that. I mean, that was actually about the most widely attended game I've seen this year. It was well attended compared to others. So it's a disappointment. In that regard, I mean, the noise is fine. I mean, they get into it. The students the students are what college students are. They're rude. They curse. They're into it. I'm not saying that like the old church lady. I'm saying they're into it at IU, but the place is never full. And maybe it's the acoustics. I don't know, but it's not as loud as other places. Now, nothing will ever be as loud as Duke. Okay, I've been there 40 times. The building is tiny. 9,000 people sound like 9 million. I mean, it's so loud in there, your ears hurt. It's just different. But IU is the tradition at IU at Assembly Hall is without question. I mean, we all know what it is, and those banners hang up there, and you see them, and they're fabulous. But I'll tell you this, and listen, I don't know who's listening, but I've got people at IU that I really like. I'm talking about high level people like AD Fred Glass and his assistants and the marketing people and the SID people. Like, I know all of them. And Archie Miller and I go way back, and Tom Ostrom, an assistant coach on the team, and I hug after every game. I find him and we hug. And I mean, we like each other that much, you know. And Joey Bronk, I go find him and hug him. And Trace Jackson Davis is becoming a guy that I like a whole lot. So this is not said with malice, but the video they have before the game, it's kind of everything that is kind of wrong right now with IU, which is to say the video is all about, look how great we used to be. And Indiana basketball was grown here. And it's all about the tradition, and maybe it's supposed to be, I don't know. But IU hadn't moved on. They haven't. The fans haven't moved on. The pregame pyrotechnics haven't moved on because they're all about kids shooting in cornfields. Let's move on. Then again, there's nothing really to be happy about in the last 15 years, so maybe you've got to be stuck in the past. But there's a long, winding answer you didn't expect to hear. But and I hope I'm saying this as compassionately and as evenly as I'm trying to be, because I truly enjoy IU people. But Assembly Hall is just, you're asking me a question. It's just, here, I'm going to say something even worse. There is no comparison as far as game day experience. I'm talking about the noise, the passion, the percentage of seats sold, the pregame, the stuff on the video board. There is no comparison between IU and Purdue. I mean, there's none. There is. I can't say that strongly enough. If you are unbiased, which I am, I want them both to win every game because that's good for my business. But you go into one arena 20 times, you go into the other arena 20 times. There's no comparison. There's just, I can't say that strong enough. I mean, this is not even up for debate. There's no comparison.
I could be wrong, and I get lots of tweets and questions. We encourage tweets and questions.
And hold on real quick. I just want to say this one more time.
Go ahead.
I could be wrong, but anybody listening that you're mad, that's not my fault. If you're mad, get mad at IU. Don't get mad at me. You know, don't get mad at the weatherman for telling you it's raining outside, all right? So you keep going.
Here's what I was going to say, and I'm going to make a prediction that I'm sure someone will think you're wrong, but we encourage tweets and questions for guests and things. So far, two I see right here on our Facebook page and say agree with Greg Doyle 100% along those lines. I think there's more people out there that feel that way about Assembly Hall, about the crowd, about it maybe being a little old school, which old school can be good. Tradition is great, especially in, you know, when you've got the tradition that Indiana does. And as you said, 15, 14 years or so, you haven't had a lot to build on from that. But I'm sure there'll be some people that disagree, but I agree with you, and I think a lot of other people listening will, a lot of IU fans, even a lot of people that from New Albany, Jeff, this area that have season tickets that make their way there through the weather at times and through the darkness and the not great roads to get to Bloomington from where we're at that are diehards. I've heard it from them as well. So I think that there might be more people, Greg, that fall on the side that you do and I do on some disappointment there than what you think.
Yeah, and when times change and, you know, the calendar flips and, you know, it's not 1976 anymore and it's not whatever year. It happens all over the place. You know, look at UCLA basketball. They've fallen. They still haven't gotten a Pod Pavilion. They redid it, but it was a dump for years. Notre Dame football is not what I thought it would be. It's not only as far as how good it is, but the passion around it. Like when I took this job in 2014, I'm like, okay, I got, you know, IU basketball, Notre Dame football. I'm where it all began. And they're both fine programs, but it's just not what it was. And it's hard to keep anything that great at that high level. You know, it's like if you're getting a 4.0 GPA every year of your life, you know, every now and then a 3-7 is going to happen, and that's okay, but you're not a 4-0 anymore. And that's kind of where both those, these programs are. They're just not the 4-0 they used to be. And I don't sense enough desperation or innovation on IU's part to shake out of the 4-0. Like, I don't want to hear any more really slow-moving, let's talk about, I mean, this is like, let's make this like this is Milan in 1954 and basketball started. No, this is not Milan 54. You were never Milan. You know, you're the big brother in this state. You're not the little brother. You know, be a bully. Be a big tough guy. You're not in a cornfield anymore. I mean, I don't know. It almost irritates me that when I'm at these games thinking this is just not how it ought to be.
Understand, Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star, presented by Coffee Crossing. Good stuff, and I think we could probably spend a lot of time on Assembly Hall as a whole and the tradition of the program and what it means to move forward, and we'll save some of that for another time, but I really appreciate
it. Okay, but real quick, I don't know if you're probably running out of time, probably going to hang up with me really soon, so let me just say this.
Oh, I want to get to some other stuff with you if you've got time, but you tell me. I'm the one that got you late today. So,
well, Luke, we got to get to my Luke Brown story. Luke Brown's the high-scoring guard from Blackford. I'm sure people know who he is. He's not going to catch Damon Bailey, although it's close. I mean, it's close. If he averages 35 a game for the rest of his career and they make one sectional final and one regional final, if he gets that many games, he will pass Damon Bailey. And it's possible. He's going to give it a run. But he's the most exciting player I've seen. I've seen Romeo Langford. Romeo Langford's exciting. I mean, Romeo Langford's great. But Luke Brown is Pete Maravich. I mean, he does weird stuff with the ball that you just don't see. Anyway, I write about him every year. I saw him in 9th grade, 10th grade, saw him last week. The story's up right now. I've never written a story about him, about anybody. Luke Brown has OCD, and frankly, so do I. And this story is so much bigger than basketball. Luke Brown bent – now, you don't beat OCD, so I don't want to make it look like it's easy, and he did this. He hadn't beaten it. He's still fighting it. But he has turned – when it comes to basketball – in fact, he discovered basketball and OCD kind of – there's a link there for him. He's great at basketball because he has OCD. That's as simple as it gets. And he and I discuss our own OCD issues. It's funny. He's telling me about what he does. I'm over there nodding my head at him, and I'm telling him about what I do, and he's over there nodding his head at me. And it's just a unique story that I've never done before. And I appreciate Luke for opening up about it. And it's, people need to see that because 1 in 40 U.S. adults, 1 in 40 have it. And people don't like to talk about it. I get that. But the more you talk about it, the better off you are.
Absolutely. Greg Doyle with us. And, Greg, if you got to go, you tell me. I've got a couple other things I'd like to get to on our list, and I apologize. Nope. Like normal, I got to you late today. I always go over in that first segment. But we were just talking Friday. Kyle Neddenrip comes on Friday from your paper, and we were talking about Trey Kaufman, and he told us he had been down to Silver Creek to watch Trey when they played New Albany. And anyhow, the story came out over the weekend. The story opens with Jim Shannon, the New Albany coach, talking about Trey Kaufman after that Silver Creek win over the Bulldogs a few weeks ago. And it's
the shot chart, yep.
Yeah, terrific piece, as always, from Kyle and from you and the sports team there on Trey Kaufman. The reason I bring this up is because yesterday another guest that comes on the show and I were talking about Trey and all of his recruiting and all of his honors and his stats and how efficient he is, and that, you know what, he's got a chance to be a McDonald's All-American. I think you got to start thinking of him from an NBA perspective with his body and his growth and what he's able to do, not only down low but out on the floor. And it led to the ultimate question is, will Trey Kaufman, here from Southern Indiana, by the time that his high school career ends, become like a Romeo? I mean, the game Saturday against Bloomington South was sold out. Indiana, Louisville, lots of locals, Kentucky showing interest as well, and lots of scholarships have been offered. And in the back of my mind, on a whole nother perspective, I don't know that it's going to be high major level like Romeo or Trey Kaufman as far as college goes, and I don't know that we'll ever talk about NBA prospects about this player, but Luke Brown has drawn that sort of fanfare and interest from his community and really from our entire state that track him night in and night out to see what his performance is and what his stat line was and how many points he scored. It's interesting to watch a guy like Romeo and that fanfare develop. And it's interesting on a whole nother level in a different type of community in a smaller school to see that fanfare develop for Luke Brown. And now we're watching it again here in Southern Indiana with Trey Kaufman at Silver Creek. It's just a unique thing to watch a high school kid build a following, and I guess a lot of it is internet, social media, that sort of thing. But it's just amazing to me to see high school kids become as notable as they are playing the game of basketball in our state.
Yeah, and I think it's great when it happens in small towns. Like, I wasn't here for Oden and Conley. They were teammates at Lawrence North, I think it was. Lawrence North, yeah. 2006. Yeah. And this is Indianapolis. It's a big city. I'm sure they sold out their games and all that, but it's just not the same. Romeo, the following he had, both in New Albany. I mean, I'll never get over that Seymour regional or sectional, whatever the hell that was, and he was a senior. I will never get over the line I saw. I got there 3 hours before tip-off, and I'll just never get over it. I get goosebumps thinking about it. I will never get over the line of people outside for Romeo. It was not. It was like it was a Space Mountain at Disney World times 30. It was crazy. It went forever. And I don't know what's going on with Kaufman, but like Luke Brown, here's a great stat. Blackford has 6,000 people. The town population 6,000. They average about 3,000 for his games. 3,500. They had a game the other night I was at, Friday night. There was supposed to be a home game, but a water well at the school or near the school that supplies the school broke on Thursday, I think, of last week, the Blackford well. And so the water's fine. No one's in danger. But just because the EPA hadn't come out yet and tested yet, they had to cancel school and they just couldn't have the game because they weren't sure they could wash their hands with the water. So they called Eastbrook the night before and said, we might be coming to your building tomorrow night for the game. Can we? And Eastbrook said, of course. But this is not just a normal game. Imagine Romeo Langford just decided the night before a Romeo game, finding out some small school down the road that you're going to host this now. You got 24 hours to get ready for it.
Mm.
Luke Brown's a circus. Is a circus. And it was all hands on deck. And I'm talking to the principal in the gym. And this is my story that I wrote. But I'm talking to the principal at Eastbrook about what's it like to prepare for this circus. And he looks around the gym that's totally sold out. And by the way, Eastbrook was 0-14. I should have put that in my story, damn it. Eastbrook's 0-14. The gym's full. 2,000 people at least. He said, this gym is never full like this except for graduation. This doesn't happen. So I love it that it happens in small towns.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. Hey, one other thing I want to get to if we have time, this was on my agenda for last week, but I had no voice and could not talk with you on Tuesday. Kobe Bryant, obviously a week ago Sunday, his tragic passing in a helicopter accident, even worse, to make a worse deal even more worse, his daughter involved and obviously killed in the accident as well. And I guess when I text you this morning that, hey, I'd like to talk about a couple things, including Kobe Bryant, you said, yes, I'd like to talk about Archie and Kobe, because I was sure that in your career, and I think, again, I say this to remind people, I don't know that people know that didn't follow you before the star, that you've covered, you know, a lot of major sports. You've CBS, and you can remind me some of the other stops you had, but you know, you obviously have interacted with a lot of athletes at a lot of different stages of their career. And I was curious, you know, given your resume, your background as a columnist and as a reporter, you know, had you ever had any interactions with Kobe Bryant, or where did you first see him play at? Things like that were what I planned to talk about or ask you. And then you mentioned something about Archie and Kobe. So I'd like to just put that whole entire subject out there and let you go on it for a minute. Interesting.
Sure. Several. Yeah, when I was at CBS, I covered the NBA Finals and playoffs quite a bit, and so I was at Staples Center a lot for Kobe. When they played the Celtics one year, and I don't even know who – I'm so bad at my memory, I don't even remember who won the Finals, but I was there for that one. So I've seen Kobe in person many, many times, but the last time I saw him in person, and the best interaction I ever had with him personally was his last game in Indianapolis. He had announced during his final season early – that it was going to be his final year. So as he went around the league, he was kind of given the goodbye treatment everywhere. And I went to the game to talk to Kobe, and he was 38 or whatever old he was, and I was asked, and his games were up and down, and I asked him, do you have any idea what you're going to have tonight for this game? Like, because he'll have a game where he had 30, and I'll have a game where he'll have 12, and of course he closed his career with 60. So I asked him, do you have any idea what's going to happen tonight with your game and where you'll be? And he said, no, it could be, and he cursed, but he said it could be shoot or Shinola, and he didn't say shoot. He said it could be shoot or Shinola. Giggling about it, and then the game happened, and for three quarters he was shoot. I mean, he was just not any good. And then he had about 75 seconds of Shinola. I mean, it was Kobe. It was the crowd's chanting Kobe. He's lighting up the Pacers. It was unbelievable. And then Archie Miller's from Pennsylvania, just like Kobe is. And I didn't realize this, but I'm talking to Archie the day Kobe died. Archie was distraught. I mean, I've known Archie, again, I've known him for 25 years. I've never seen him look like this. Archie's a metronome. He's very stoic. He was distraught and almost crying several times. And he says that Kobe was a year older than him in Pennsylvania. So Kobe was the player of the year in 95 or 6, whenever that was. Archie was, if not the player of the year, he was the number one recruit out of Pennsylvania the next year. And, of course, I met him the following year. He goes to NC State. But so he was the best player of the year later. So Archie, I'm sorry, Kobe's on the McDonald's All-American team as a senior. Well, guess who the coach of the team is that year? Archie Miller's dad, John Miller, is the coach. And so John Miller's coaching Kobe, and he brings out his young kid, Archie, as a high school junior, to practice with the team and scrimmage because they needed a body. And so Archie's on the court. He said it's a two-on-one, and Archie's the one, and Kobe's on the two. And it's, you know, they're barreling down on Archie Miller, and Kobe, he said, just glides right past him. Just and Archie said, kind of patted him on the head and said, "Get out of the way, son," and just dunked on him or something. And Kobe runs by and tells his dad, "You better get your son out of here. He's going to get hurt." But then later, Kobe told John Miller that, you know, Archie, he's a baller. He's 5'9", right? But he said he's going to be just fine. So Archie had a Kobe story, but he also has a daughter about Gianna's age, and he was busted up by that whole thing.
Yeah, I can imagine. Terrible stuff. Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star, this segment presented by Coffee Crossing. Greg, as always, thanks for the chat. Appreciate some extra time with you today, and we'll do it again next week.
That was a 2-cup of sugar-free chocolate coffee.
I owe right you. There. I owe want you. Double. Double.
Okay.
Thanks, Greg. All right, Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star. Love that guy, man. He's so fun to have on. Creative, energetic. I wish I had his ideas and his energy. He is something else. I got to share this with you. I know we're running behind. We need to get to a break and get Mike Pegram with us. But it was just put out by the Big Ten Network just before we came on the air. If the Big Ten tournament was today, if the season ended today, where the standings are at right now, here's what the bracket would look like. And what's crazy about it is Ohio State would be a 12 seed, so they would be playing one of four teams playing on the first day, March 11th of the tournament. Michigan would be an 11 seed. They would be one of four teams playing on the first day of the tournament. Indiana would be the 9th seed. They would be in the second round on March 12th, that Friday, taking on Purdue. The quarterfinals, teams getting the byes, 1 through 4, Michigan State, Illinois, Maryland, and Iowa would all get byes today. Of course, this bracket will change a lot, like bracketology and guesses about the NCAA tournament will. But if you ever told me that at any point in the year, Ohio State and Michigan would be projected to play on the first day of the Big Ten, that little four-team dreary opening games, I would have said no way. But Ohio State, Nebraska, and Michigan, Northwestern would be the matchups in the Big Ten tournament if it was seeded right this minute for the conference tournament. I look at that bracket, even the one now, and, man, who's to say if it did end this way, who's to say Michigan couldn't obviously beat Northwestern? Who's to say then they couldn't? They would play Penn State the way this thing's laid out right now. Who's to say they couldn't win that? Then they'd play Maryland. I mean, if it finishes like this, if there are some teams that slip down that maybe shouldn't be, I mean, you could see somebody that plays on that first day win it. That's as crazy. That's how crazy this conference is this year. But interesting to think about. Boy, the Big Ten tournament could be a lot of fun to be at this year. And follow. We'll head to a break. We'll come back with Mike Pegram of Pegs.com. We'll talk more IU basketball. We'll take a very early peek at the IU-Purdue matchup with Mike as well. All coming your way here on a Tuesday edition of the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back. Final segment on this Tuesday program. Mike Pegram of Pegs.com is with us. And Mike, a little, I don't want to say downtime, but a little slower time for the team and the coaches. Curious what you think this week will look like with not games coming every other day or every third day. Will this team, will practice be heavy this week? Will practice be longer this week? Or is this an opportunity to get in class, to focus on school, to maybe in some way step away from some of the troubles just a little bit before refocusing later in the week before Purdue? What is a slower week like this, do you think, look like for Indiana basketball?
Well, this team has a lot to work on. They're in a three-game losing streak, so I would think that at least the first 3 or 4 days of this week-long break would be some longer practices, keying on the weaknesses of the team, and then maybe taper off as the week goes along to get some fresh legs for Purdue on Saturday.
Mike Pegram, Beegs.com. Let's talk some about the Purdue matchup for this team. It's obviously an important game. We can say that, I think, about every game the rest of the way. It's at home, and Purdue is not normal Purdue. It's a Purdue team that's they've had some good moments, but generally they've struggled this season, which is reflected by their record. There's no way around it at home. This is a game, Mike, that Indiana really has to win.
Yeah, they could probably only afford maybe one more home loss. And Purdue is down, not way down, but down enough that it's one of those that Indiana has to win to kind of keep them above the line for making the NCAA tournament, which is, you know, really huge for this program to get back in the tournament, take one positive step this year, and hopefully take bigger steps down the road.
Mike, as we see bracketologies and predictions coming out for NCAA tournament brackets on a somewhat weekly basis as we enter February, I know we've talked about this before, but is Indiana on track? I mean, they're appearing in the bracketology, the guesses that I've seen so far, but is Indiana on track? You mentioned you thought they could afford no more than one home loss the rest of the way in a worst-case scenario. What do you see? What else do you see this team has to do or can't do if they want to preserve the spot that they've been receiving in a lot of these bracketology guesses so far and actually take that step forward and make the tournament in March?
Well, I think I told you last time I was on that I thought 9-11 in the Big Ten would get them into the tournament because the Big Ten is known as the strongest league in the country this year, at least in terms of depth of good teams. That's where kind of my thought of, well, they could afford one more home loss. Right now they're even. One home loss, one road win in the league, you know, which is on course for, I guess, a 10-10 type season. They lose one at home and don't win on the road again, which could very well happen because they don't have any Northwesterns or Nebraskas on the left of the schedule. That would give them the 9-11, which I think would be get them in, but it wouldn't be the kind of way you want to go in. It could possibly mean a game in Dayton, one of those as a 10 seed or something like that. But if they can hold serve at home and get to 10-10 or better in the league, I think they get into that 7-6 seed, maybe an 8 seed, where they, you know, avoid that extra game and have a, you know, maybe go into the first round game as a favorite.
Talking with Mike Pegram of Pegs.com here on a Tuesday edition of the program. Let's look a little bit more into the Purdue game, the Purdue matchup for Indiana on Saturday. As you look at some of the individual matchups, some of who will be guarding who, what type of challenge do you see Purdue as, and maybe some of the things that or players that Indiana fans should be most concerned about heading into this first of two rivalry games?
Well, I'm messing with a 7-footer inside. It could make it difficult for Indiana's reliance on Trace Jackson Davis and Joey Brunk inside. And Purdue has some guys that tend to shoot well at home and not so well on the road, but that doesn't mean it's always going to be that way. They have had trouble scoring just like Indiana. I think that Noel Eastern could be a good matchup for on the Purdue side to slow down the Indiana point guard. But, you know, normally that would be Robert Phinisee. So that would be something to watch is whether Indiana can get into their offense or whether, you know, he's able to disrupt the ball and throw everything off.
Did you see the Big Ten tournament pairings? If the bracket was seeded today, and I mentioned this going out of the last segment with Greg Doyle, if the bracket was seeded today, which I know so much will change every day between now and when the bracket is officially seeded, but if the bracket was seeded today, Michigan would play on the opening day, as would Ohio State. They would be two of the four opening day teams to play, which is just crazy when you think back to where those teams were expected to be at the start of the year and projected to be in the conference. I sure didn't see them playing on the first day. Still likely that they may not, but just interesting to see how that thing shook out today when it was seeded just for fun.
Yeah, it just shows the parity of the league. I mean, I don't think there's a Final Four team in the Big Ten, but it might be the best 12th place team we've ever seen in this league. And that just means every game is a toss-up, especially for an Indiana team, like I said, that doesn't have the 13th and 14th best teams on their schedule left the remainder of the year.
Mike, I want to close with this. The IU women last night victorious at Mackey. They complete the two-game sweep of Purdue in the women's Big Ten season, which is big for them. They have a chance. They've been making noise all season long. They have a chance to make some noise, I think, in the postseason as well. Hadn't been perfect. There have been a couple slip-ups here and there. But overall, when you talk about taking steps forward, as you were talking about what the men's program needs to do and could do this season with the NCAA tournament appearance, the women's team last year and then again this year, it appears to be taking some big steps forward.
Yeah, they have a real chance to win the league and an excellent chance to get a top four seat for the NCAA tournament. Just a really well-balanced team. And if you haven't had a chance to go out and watch them play, you know, do so, and or catch them on the BTN when they are on, and because they're really fun to watch. They share the ball really well, and they've had some younger players step up, you know, and make this a, you know, potentially special team.
Mike Pegram, Peaks.com, always with us on Tuesdays. Mike, before you go, you've got a special running right now for IU diehards that aren't currently part of the Peaks.com website for all your great articles, stories, videos, and, of course, those very active basketball forums, especially where fans gather to talk all the time about IU basketball. Tell us about that if someone wants to take advantage of a VIP special right this minute.
Yeah, we have a 60% off an annual subscription. Also, if you've been a monthly subscriber, you can upgrade if you haven't jumped on one of our recent specials and get a really good price on annual. It's kind of centered around signing day, which is Wednesday for football, but it might not happen for a while again. This will be really the last chance, maybe until football season starts up before we run a special. So jump on it. It only lasts through Wednesday.
Mike Pegram, Peaks.com, always with us Tuesdays. Thank you, Mike, and that's going to wrap things up for this Tuesday program. Back with you Wednesday at 11 a.m. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.